Hello and welcome to another episode of Sisters Assembled. We are firmly, pretty much smack dab in the middle of season one of X-Men 97. And today we're going to be breaking down all things episode four, which was kind of a mini two-parter and a little bit of a break from some of the formatting that we've had in the first three episodes. So definitely an interesting episode to break down and an interesting way to go about an episode. So we will be talking all about it in this episode of Sisters Assembled. And like always, I'm going to let Katie kick it off with her initial reactions to episode four of X-Men 97.
This one was pretty weird for me. And you said about it being the weird, like, inside the episode, almost being a two-parter. And I'm not sure how I felt about it, because on top of it being a two-parter, we really only dealt with four characters almost the entire time, which is not unusual. We've done that before. But I think coming off of what we just came off of from episode three threw me off, because I was expecting some fallout. And instead, you know, we went in totally different directions. And that's fine. I just was not sure what was happening the whole time.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie. Like, this one was not it for me. Like, I didn't dislike it, but when you compare it to the first three episodes, it just does not stack up. I didn't mind picking up on the Storm storyline, because that's definitely been relegated to a B-plot level for the last episode, especially where we only got a couple of minutes of her, you know, meeting up with Forge in that bar. So I was totally good with making the pivot there. But I think my biggest qualm is, if you're going to do like a mini two-parter, the first section with Jubilee, while cute and like now she has like a little boy toy, like that's fun and all, it felt like filler. And I was like, you actually have like really intense storylines that I would much rather you spend this 10 or 15 minutes exploring than Jubilee's like birthday special. And I get that, like, they're very much hearkening back to that 90s cartoon, that filler type. They did that filler type special stuff. Like, yeah. I literally was just finishing up season four last week of the original episode, or sorry, the original series. And they had like a whole Christmas special, because that's what cartoons used to do. So I totally get like having this little side quest for her. But at the same time, you're coming off a Goblin Queen episode. So like, is this really the time to be doing side quests?
I agree. I also think part of it was, I wasn't prepared for a side quest. I was thinking, oh, we're going to go back to the whole, like, I'm going to call it the Mojoverse, because he is a reoccurring character. I believe there's two or three episodes, maybe even four, including him in the original series. So I was not against that, because I thought we were all going to make an appearance. But then it was just Jubilee and Sunspot. So I was like, oh, okay, that's fine. I'm not sure why we took that little trip. I'm actually not sure what we learned from it, other than Jubilee has been learning that she has more powers, which I am excited about, because I feel like even the OG series kind of keeps her pretty on the B team. Like, she's pretty much a B team of one 90% of the time, which I do. I feel bad.
She's also a kid, though.
Right.
Which, like, because she turned 18 today. So I'm like, I get it. Like, you still have, these people have had their powers, some of them probably longer than you've literally been alive. So, like, it's kind of like, it makes sense. But to your point, I think the one good thing that came out of our little side quest is now Jubilee's 18. She's starting to learn her powers even more. So maybe we're going to get to see her, like, be a true, she is a true X-Men, but like a combatant X-Men in the way that she was not able to be when she was 15, 16, 17 in the original series.
Yeah. And be more involved.
For sure.
And I think that's what is definitely important, I hope, is what the point of what we saw was, is to see her be more involved and be more of an active member of the team. Otherwise, if that isn't the direction they go, then I'm going to be sad, because I feel like that's kind of why I was a little sad during the OG series involving her, because I kept thinking, like, when is Jubilee getting there? When are they going to let her be part of the team more? And I think I could be wrong, but I feel like age is a little more of a gray area in the OG series, and timing is a little bit of a gray area of when things take place, how much time goes between episodes and certain events and whatever. Because of that, I was not aware of how old Jubilee was until this exact moment. I knew she was young at the beginning, and I know they definitely mentioned her age at some point, but I don't remember later in the seasons them saying anything. So I think me not seeing her become an X-Men more was disappointing for me. So I'm hoping that's where we're going with this. Otherwise, Mojo came back. Mojo made another appearance in his like wacky TV world. And I don't know, knowing him, he'll return. Because I actually kind of enjoy his psycho TV realm that he has built for himself.
You like the Mojo episodes? They're like my least favorite.
I think they're so off kilter. And I think it's interesting, but then also hurts my brain at the same time trying to understand his little universe in general. But I kind of enjoy it. And I also have to say, the very first episode where he like purposely... with him in it, where he purposely puts Jean and Wolverine together, I'm like, oh, Mojo. Like, I am entertained by this.
I don't know. I just find his episodes to be like, they're just side quests. Like, there's no better word for it. And I am very much like a plot-driven person. We're 100 and some episodes into this show, into our podcast, right? So if you've listened to any of these, you know that I am focused on the plot and the narrative and character development, and like those are the things that I like to talk about.
Okay, but what did you say to me last week when I said something about the Goblin Queen storyline? You were like, well, remember, this is still technically a kid's show. So now I'm gonna say it back to you that this is still technically a kid's show.
Which I totally recognize. I just, my personal opinion is that I don't like the Mojo episodes because they feel so kid's showy because they are the side quest episodes. So immediately when we got pulled into the Mojo verse, I was like, oh my God, they brought this of all things back. Like, this was one thing I could have left in the 90s. And I'm like, oh my God, here we go again. Luckily, they didn't give him a full episode. That was like my favorite part about the split. I was like, thank God, I don't have to deal with this BS for an entire episode. At least it's only going to be part of it. Jubilee gets her side quest. She gets her boyfriend thing, whatever that is. He kind of gets more comfortable with his power, so there's a little bit of development there going on for Roberto. So that part was cool. But then it like immediately went to Storm, and I was like, oh, so now we're gonna get real plot too. Great. So I don't know if that was something that they, you know, in the writer's room were like, yeah, maybe we don't need an entire episode dedicated to Mojo. We can learn from the 90s and move on from that. I was good with that part. But yeah, Mojo episodes are my absolute least favorite episodes.
No, I like them, but I will say I thought it was strange that we didn't tie it further into what, like, the rest of the characters or anything. I was expecting, oh, I'm trying to remember the name of it. It's one of the last few episodes in season 5, and it's like an alien technology thing, and it's like yellow and black.
Phalanx.
Yes.
I'm literally watching those episodes right now.
Yes. And I was thinking this was going to go kind of like that with the way that the video games kind of spewed out. I was thinking, okay, everybody in the house is going to end up involved in this in some way because it's going to start with the people closest, obviously, and it's going to spread. And then it didn't. So I think that is where it lost me. And then I also was like checking my watch because I was trying to exercise during it. We were multitasking during this episode. And I'm like, listen, I am 20 minutes into this exercise and I know there's more to these episodes now. So I couldn't figure out then they kiss and everything, which also... interesting, these writers clearly are like, everybody gets a romance now because everybody's getting a romance.
Can we just stop and have a romance side quest? Let's talk about all the things that are going on romantically in this episode. Your opening.
Oh, wait. Before we do that, because this is involved in romance, but I gotta say, the Jean Cyclops divorce, I was like, shut up. That is so funny. I cackled.
Yeah, it was pretty good. I mean, Mojo episodes are not my favorite, but I will say his sense of humor is pretty spot on. And I do find him someone who can make me chuckle. Yeah, that was funny.
No, that was so funny because it like took me a second because I wasn't looking up initially. And then I looked up and I read it and I was like, he really went there. And I appreciate that.
Yeah, he definitely did. But back to we're going to call it our little romance segment, and we're going to leave Storm and Forge out of it because obviously they're going to get the bulk of this episode. So we'll seamlessly move right into them. But first, we have Jubilee and Sunspot because they got the first half of the episode, and you know, we kind of saw the vibes happening in the, I think, the first episode when we first meet Roberto. I think he's shown up a couple of times, always a Jubilee side in the last two episodes. So clearly there have been some vibes, but we finally have kind of crossed over into some more full-on romance. I'm happy for the girl. The poor thing is like sequestered with all of these older people. She basically has like a bajillion parents, and the poor thing is like a teenager. She just needs to like live her teenage life, and I'm all here for that.
I agree, but I also, it's gonna sound horrible when I say it, and maybe I'm broken, but I didn't pick up the vibes, and then suddenly she kissed him and I was like, oh, that's what we're doing,
girl. Episode one, you didn't pick up the vibes?
I think it's because I maybe did, but I think I was like, oh, he's not sticking around, because at the end of the episode, he leaves. And then it was weird because in episode three, he was there and I was confused because they never really show him agreeing to return. I know him and Jubilee talk, but like they never really show him being like, yeah, or whatever. So then he's just there and I'm confused on his involvement. And then the next thing you know, he's there again. And I'm like, who is this man?
Well, I don't think he's an X-Men. Like, I don't think he agreed to that at all.
No, he's not. But I just think I was confused because like, he seems so adamant about leaving. And I know she talked to him and I'm sure you could change your mind, but I think that happened not on screen. So then him just kind of showing up and being at the mansion, I was like, why are you here? I'm confused.
See, I was picking up on the vibe. So I was like, okay, I see why he's here. Like, he's a man with a goal.
Okay, listen, maybe I'm a little distracted by my favorite Cajun and Silver Fox over here in their little love triangle. So maybe that is the distraction.
All right, let's get into the love triangle. We have some very different vibes. So we have some sweet little first love going on. And then we have some real intense adult love triangle things going on. So let's dive into it, because Gambit is not a happy camper right now. Rogue looks like she wants to hide under a rock every time the whole group is together. And it's just a feast. It's just a feast. The drama is amazing.
Listen, I think this needs to turn into a reoccurring segment every episode.
Yes.
And it's Katie needs to check in on her fave love triangle, because
this is my favorite plot line.
No, it literally. First off, though, they brought him back in that crop top. And I said, thank you. Thank you for that. I appreciated it. Okay. We were happy from the first like 5 seconds of this episode. Then my guy is out here being like, I got you some sugar. And then Rogue's like, oh, well, I already got some. And then Magneto's like, yeah, she takes, or coffee. And he's like, yeah, she takes 3 sugars. And I'm like, oh, get out of here. But also don't, like, fight. Like, do something. But then they don't, and they get interrupted. And I'm like, Jubilee, I don't care. It's your birthday. Things were happening.
I know, like, girl, our favorite plot line was getting the A plot spot. So I'm going to need you to move your birthday down to B or C. Like, not here right now.
Yeah, like, who got the right coffee? Who was Rogue happier about that got the right coffee? I need to understand.
But also, that girl who literally never, ever, ever looks uncomfortable, except for like when she would like to physically contact another human being, looked so uncomfortable. Like, she wanted the floor to open up and eat her, because she straight up knows what she's doing. She knows that Gambit knows what she's doing. And Magneto knows, obviously, but just does not care. And it is just delicious.
I'm really glad you picked up on that, primarily because I never looked at Rogue once during that scene.
There were quite a few other things competing for attention, I will agree.
There really were. And so I'm really glad you looked at her and picked up on her being uncomfortable, because I was distracted. And I also was like, who got the coffee right? And then, you know, Gambit sits there and he goes, I guess you're taking orders. I'll have, I don't know if he said like a cappuccino or a frap. And then Magneto hits him with the, actually, I give the orders. And I was like, oh, okay, put him in his place. But also, Gambit, fight.
Yeah, there was some posturing going on for sure. But it was an interesting interaction. And again, like, honestly, this is the plot line that I wait for week after week. Like,
no, literally.
Cool, Goblin Queen, cool, Jean and Scott, who were not in this episode at all, kind of hate each other now. Like, it's super awkward, but like, this plot line is the most dramatic thing happening right now in this show. Okay, not so much last episode, but especially this episode in the first half, most dramatic thing happening. But it's also the one thread that has gone through every single episode thus far.
And you know why? Because this is going to be somehow, mark my words, this is going to be Magneto's downfall somewhere here.
Oh, it's gotta be.
Because you are fighting to get this team to trust you. And listen, he's had some good points. He has sat there and fought by their side during the whole Goblin Queen thing. He has sat and gone through trial and he didn't kill anybody. He is trying his best, but Gambit will be his undoing because you want this team to trust you. And the first thing you're doing is going after someone else's girl. That's bold because you are about to have Gambit fighting and he will take everybody else with him because they will pick him before they pick you, bro.
Yeah. And not to mention, like, from a leadership and power dynamic standpoint,
questionable at best.
Yeah, like going for one of your team members that you are leading and sending forth into battle, that's the first thing you do. That's super questionable. And then every choice that you make that involves her from now on is going to be second guessed by people once they fully understand the level of the situation. Because why did you put Rogue in that position? Or why did you send her forth or put her in the back? Are you protecting her? Are you doing this, that, or the other thing? Like, all of those things are going to come into question. Or even last episode when the Goblin Queen was, you know, having her meltdown and they were nowhere to be found. You're the leader and she's one of the strongest members of the team. And you two were too busy gallivanting to actually go help with a serious mega threat. So yeah, there's a lot on the line here and it definitely calls his leadership into question. And I don't know that everybody has figured it out yet. Like, obviously Gambit, because that's his girl, is like, hello, you are encroaching on my relationship. Could you please step off, sir? And he sees it because it's affecting his relationship. But I think everybody else is like so busy dealing with their own stuff. Obviously, the Jean Scott Wolverine love triangle is still going strong after all these years. That's another love triangle we love to love. And then now Jubilee's got her person that she's all excited about. Friend or more, doesn't matter. That's her new person. Professor Xavier's obviously gone and Storm is gone. I don't know where Beast has been. Honestly, he's very much been a background character. And Morph has figured it out, but Morph just finds it funny.
They are so funny. I mean, they will be on the screen for literally 10 seconds and I don't care. It is the funniest 10 seconds of the entire episode between their expression or their one-liner that they give. I'm still thinking about the Danger Room one.
Oh my God,
from last episode. So much happened last episode and I'm still thinking about when Morph was making jokes with Gambit about the fact, to Gambit about the fact that Rogue and Magneto had the Danger Room booked for the next like 24 hours. So freaking funny.
So good. They pulled a face this episode and I can't even describe it to you, but it was in the few minutes of screen time they got, like you mentioned, and they just made this face and someone said something to them and their reaction was just so funny. Mm-hmm. I was like, Morph, why are you such a scene stealer? Like, you did not get enough credit in the enough really screen time or development in the first series. So I wasn't that attached to you, but now you are just such a lovable character in this series that I'm like, yes, Morph, do it again. Just literally be you because you're awesome.
That's exactly how I feel. And I said before, in the OG series, Morph freaked me out. I don't know what the vibe was. I don't know if it was the animation around the face of who they usually present. I don't know, but the vibe made me uncomfy. And also that uncomfortable laugh that they always used to do, which they aren't super having them do, at least for now. But now the writing, again, 10 seconds on screen and Morph is one of my faves. I don't care.
Yeah, I truly, like, I love them. I hope, you know, this episode, obviously we spent so much time with Jubilee getting like a full half of her own episode, and then we'll get to Storm, of course, but like, give me a Morph centered episode. Like, I would love to see them, not just for the 10 seconds of screen time as like comedic relief that they've gotten in the first four or so episodes, but like, I would love to see more of them. Like, what are they doing? How are they interacting? Because truly, like, they are such an entertaining individual and member of the team. And also, like, I think what's really cool about them is the fact that they can also like inherit the people's powers that they take on the shape of. Like, truly, don't sleep on Morph, because like, they could be anybody and take on anybody's powers. So why would they not be considered an incredibly powerful mutant? And I think sometimes because they're so funny and entertaining, that can get lost, but like, they're also totally able to kick some booty.
Oh, for sure. Listen, I could go on all day about Morph, but we have to finish our romance update.
Yes.
And that, I'm going to start with Jean / not Jean and Scott. Divorce? We aren't really sure. We are clearly in disarray. The relationship, unknown. They didn't even make an appearance in this episode. That is how unknown their relationship status is. It is just out there for our interpretation, I guess.
Yeah, it definitely is very crazy to me that they went from, here's an entire episode about your relationship, to you do not even get to show your face in the next one at all. And I get it. Like, we are focusing on other characters and other storylines, but for them to not even appear was crazy. I do wonder if they're like taking some time together to try to rebuild their relationship, because again, like, we don't know how long Jean has been gone. She doesn't know how long she's been gone. We don't know what she missed. They probably aren't really married. So like, do they need to get divorced? Unclear. So there's a lot of questions, and I think they need to just have a conversation.
I think he needs to divorce someone though.
Yeah, he would have to divorce Madeline, but for that, he'd have to find her. So there's like a lot. And I do think though, like, obviously this is coming back. The idea of Jean not knowing how long she's been gone, we talked about this last episode, like, I really do think that we're gonna find that answer, whether it's this season or next season. So this is a plot thread that we're gonna have to resume at some point. Am I a little sad that they decided at this moment to give us a half filler episode with Jubilee's section of the episode and completely ignore the ramifications of the absolute bonkers craziness that was episode 3? Like, yeah, not super into the timing on that one. You could have probably given me an episode 6 or 7 half side quest, and I would have been a little happier than coming off of the episode that we had last week.
But for sure,
it's definitely something that we're gonna, you know, explore more. I want to see what's happening. Clearly they're not in a good place, and I want the drama. Like, this show has become a little bit of a soap opera, and I'm really, really into it.
Well, let's get into it, because TBD on Scott and Jean, right? We know Wolverine's gonna try and make another pass. Great. That is all we know about this. But the soap opera, let's talk about Miss Storm, because I know there was more important things that happened here, but she slapped the crap out of Forge. I gasped. I was like, oh my God.
She totally did. And she totally was like, I don't even need my powers to destroy you, man. And she did. And it was an absolute power move from a queen and a goddess. And it was wonderful. I mean, imagine the betrayal, which, by the way, this is like a ripped from the comics storyline. This whole idea of their romance, the fact that he helped build the technology that took away her powers, all of that is actually a storyline in the comics called Life Death. So much of that is ripped right from the comics. If you were curious, you can read summaries on it. The whole being whose name is currently escaping me, Adversary, who comes in at the end, also ripped right from the comics. So that part is awesome as well. But yeah, she absolutely just went for it, and I was into it.
Okay, wait, because you brought it up, that was all real.
What was real?
The entire ending.
Yes. Yeah, that was real.
Okay. Well, that was my big question coming out of it, was I genuinely couldn't figure out if what I was watching was happening or not. I wasn't sure what was going on. So that, okay, it's good to know, because I was confused. Clearly, I spent a lot of time being confused. No, I really just wasn't sure, because she fell through a roof and I was like, how'd she get there? And then this weird bug thing shows up, and it felt like one of those trippy episodes where so much is going on, but it's not actually happening, or like it is, but it's not in our world. It felt like a Mojo episode, if I'm being honest, where it's like, this is weird and it's happening. And yes, the characters are living through it, but it's not affecting our exact world or like them in this exact world. So that's why I wasn't sure. I was very confused on this random bug thing that showed up.
Yeah, so I actually think it's supposed to be more of an owl, not a bug.
Really? Like,
that's why she pointed out the owl at the beginning of the episode.
Let me look up a picture of this thing. What's it called?
Adversary. That's not how it looks in the comics from what I've seen, but I think that's why she specifically pointed out the owl early in the episode, so that it kind of like transforms into that ugly thing we saw at the end. But yes, Adversary is something that Forge actually fights, I think, multiple times in the comics. So that is straight from the comics. And they do end up in another like dimension or world or something or whatever together. I don't know the difference between a dimension or a universe. We still have never figured that out. But they end up in the comics in a whole nother place, the two of them together. So I think that's, there is a second part to this episode, or the second part to the second part of this episode, and that's likely where we're gonna end up in that part, if I had to hazard a guess.
I hear you. I looked up a picture though, and I see it now. I see the owl. I think I honestly was confused on if she was dreaming or not, so I really wasn't paying enough attention to the shape of the thing, and I think I just, my brain filled in the blanks and said, it looks like a bug. It doesn't. You're correct. I see the owl. I see the beak. I see the wings. Like, I get it now. I do see it. So I'm on the same page as you. We will definitely be seeing more of this, because this was only a part one, which I also thought was weird why this part one was shoved with a completely other, it was strange. It was just a strange choice, in my opinion.
Not to mention, part two is in the next episode.
It's not.
No, I think I read somewhere it's like episode six. If you look at the listing of episodes, Life Death part two is like listed as like episode five or six.
I'm pretty sure next episode is five, Taylor.
You're right. So it's either six or seven, but there's definitely something in between where I was like, what?
Oh, you're right, because it's called Remember It, and it's going to probably be about Jean.
Okay, here's my thing, and this is going to be a complaint for Marvel animation overall, not just X-Men 97. They need to get their episode orders a little bit more locked down, because I think we've seen this in What If as well, that some things appear to be out of order and they don't make sense. Like, obviously, seeing the Gamora episode in, did it even happen in season two? Yeah. The Gamora episode where she like kills Thanos. Like, obviously that was changed because it was supposed to be in season one, so they kind of did it differently. But like having her show up in the season finale of season one of What If without ever getting her background, where we've got the background of the other however many characters, didn't make sense. This, like, why would you go from Goblin Queen to a half filler, half life death episode back to the characters who are mostly affected by, or most affected by the Goblin Queen episode, then back to Life Death Part 2. What's the point here? Figure it out and do it in a more cohesive manner, please. Because even the original series, if we were, you know, watching a few episodes about the Phalanx, they were all together. If we were going to watch the Dark Phoenix saga, they were all together. They at least put the same storyline in consecutive episodes, so you weren't switching back and forth.
I definitely am on the same page with you on that, because I'm looking at it all now, just so we have it for reference. And you're correct. Obviously, we all just saw Life Death Part 1 at the back end of this episode. Then you have Remember It, which, again, I'm inferring is going to be about Jean. Then we have Life Death Part 2. Then we have a standalone, I assume. And then the last three episodes are all part of Tolerance is Extinction.
So that's Magneto's downfall.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Come on.
Oh, yeah.
Tolerance is Extinction?
Yeah. Unless it's the humans, but we'll see. Regardless, I agree with what you are saying. I am fully on the same page. We had that problem with What If, and I'm actually, it wasn't just the Gamora episode. I feel like there was an issue in season two in general with some of them just didn't seem like they were in the right order. I feel like that was a conversation we had.
Didn't have something to do with Strange?
I think so. I don't fully remember, but I do feel like that was a conversation we had during that time. It has been like 4 months, so I'm not fully remembering. But yeah, I have to agree, especially if next episode, next week, is regarding Jean trying to recover from everything that just happened. It's like, Why? Because I don't need a break. I want to know what happens. That's all we talked about last week was cannot wait for next episode to see what goes down now. Because don't forget, episode 3 ended with that really, really solemn scene between Scott and Jean just standing over a broken bed. Very symbolic. And I wanted more. So it is a little weird. It was a little bit of a weird choice. I'll have to see how it plays out. And by the end of this, maybe that will be a complaint we have, is that they just were not ordered very well. But yeah, I don't know. It's weird. And now we're not getting more of the weird owl bug thing until the next episode, episode 6, I guess. So I don't know.
Honestly, I think that's been really my only complaint, other than having like a Mojo filler half episode, just because I personally, Mojo's not my guy. But like this kind of weird, haphazard moving around, like you can do a really good job of having multiple plot lines happening at the same time without jumping between them. Like exactly what they did last week with Storm at the end of the episode. Obviously, they were hinting, okay, so keep the Jean storyline going, keep hinting at how Storm's storyline is developing, then give me Life, Death 1 and 2 right next to one another, because you've set this up in these tiny little vignette scenes at the end. So it just doesn't make any sense to me why we're hopping between storylines. I want a cohesive, all right, great, we're going to finish this. We know this is happening in the background. That's fine. Now we're going to finish that. Then we're going to go into the big finale, which deals with our leader. At least that's what we're positing. Great. Okay, cool. That's a cohesive storyline. Not this flip-flopping. Like, it's also just hard to follow. Like, now I have to remember, well, where'd we leave off with Jean and Scott? And, like, how is this affecting the underlying plot line, which is our favorite love triangle? And then also you have Storm. So how is she going to get a little hint at the end of the episode about what's happening with her and Forge? Like, just give me one, wrap it up, and then give me the next one. Like, it's not that hard.
Yeah, I actually, you were saying about that being your complaint then. I think my complaint regarding this episode is Storm doesn't do tiny spaces. And we saw her kind of look a little stressed going into that weird little container thing that Forge had built. But I don't feel like she reacted enough for somebody who's that claustrophobic. Like, we've had full storylines follow her claustrophobia and how she's unable to do certain things because of it. And it's very debilitating for her. And she just was like, sigh, close my eyes, I'm fine. And I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. What?
I hear you. I do. I will say, to play devil's advocate, she is so desperate to get her powers back.
Yeah, which I could definitely agree with. But I just kind of thought she'd, even just a one-liner of being like, I don't know, this makes me nervous, or I don't really do small spaces or something. I just felt really weird because it's such a, I wouldn't say it if it wasn't such a pivotal part of her character, but they drive it home that she is claustrophobic. It is a trauma response. She's dealt with something as a child and that is what she is responding to. And so that just kind of, I was like, I'm going to nitpick. This is annoying. But I'm intrigued about the machine because it didn't work. But Forge is supposed to theoretically be able to build, that's his power, anything that he can imagine for the most part. So I would think if he's able to imagine a machine that works the way he needs it to work, shouldn't it work? Or am I confusing his abilities?
No, I think you're right. I will say, though, in the comics, so I did do a little bit of a summary on like what is this life-death storyline, because apparently it's a pretty big line for the two of them, especially in their relationship. So I was like, okay, so if this is, a lot of articles that I was reading were literally calling them iconic. So here we go. Check another iconic storyline off the X-Men animated series list.
Nice.
And so I was like, all right, I got to understand, like, what is this life-death thing? He doesn't actually help her get her powers back until they're in that other dimension.
Okay.
Which is what I was trying to get at before. So wherever Adversary took them, I think that's the place where he's able to get her powers back. So that should be interesting. And I also, you know, I'm really curious about their relationship and how that's going to end up working, because to defeat Adversary in the comics, they actually sacrifice themselves. The entire X-Men team sacrifices themselves, and it's another character who's able to bring them back, but they don't actually tell anyone that they're back. So Forge thinks that he got Storm her powers back, and then she died not long after. And it's not until he finds out, not accidentally, but without her telling him that she's alive, that he even realizes that the woman he loves is still living. So that really kind of damages their relationship. So there's a lot that really comes out of this, and it really hit, there's a lot that centers on their relationship with one another. So it could be really interesting. I don't know if they're going to take it that far or if they're just going to go, okay, Storm lost her powers. Now they're going to go into this other dimension and fight Adversary, and then they're going to beat him there, and she's going to come back and be the absolute powered goddess we know her to be. Or if they're going to play it all the way out and the X-Men are actually going to sacrifice themselves and then be brought back to life secretly, which could set up whole different plot lines for season two. I'm not sure, but that is kind of a very 3,000 level view of the trajectory of this storyline in the comics.
That's interesting because I'm also not sure what direction they'll go because nobody's keeping tabs of Storm.
Yeah.
That we know of. Not a single person knows where she is at this point because she left when nobody knew she was going to leave. And so nobody actually is like, Storm is now in another dimension slash universe slash whatever you want to call it. So unless, and Forge is not with her, right? The ending showed Forge is not with her.
I'm trying to remember now.
I just remember her being in the arms of the owl bug thing.
Yes. I thought he had both of them in that, like he had her in his arms, but I thought he took both of them with him to that like super red space.
Okay. Well, I ask because to clarify, because if Forge is not with her, he could send an SOS to the X-Men, therefore bringing them in.
Correct.
If he is, there is not a soul who knows they are not there on our regular plane of existence.
Correct. You're right.
So that's kind of, it's like if it's one way, if it's the first way I mentioned, I could see the X-Men maybe being involved. If it's the second way, I think this could be a solo Storm storyline.
Yes, I will just say to clarify, and I probably just didn't explain this well, like they are the only people who go into that dimension together, and they spend like a year there together alone. It's where they really build their relationship. It's how during that time that he gets her powers back, and they really build a very special bond. So I think that might not necessarily be indicative of whether or not the X-Men will be involved and we're going to go the full like sacrificial storyline, just because either way they do kind of end up in this other dimension alone. I think it's when Adversary comes back into our dimension that the X-Men get involved, but I'm not 100% sure. It's a little bit confusing. So that was kind of my understanding, but take that with a little bit of a grain of salt because I might not totally have understood that correctly.
What? A comic storyline is slightly confusing to understand. Who would have thought?
I know. Maybe I should just like read the actual comic instead of the summary, but that's so much time. And then you have to find it. It's challenging. And then you're just like, it's led up to by other storylines. Then you might as well go all the way back to the beginning. That's hundreds of issues. And there's like so many different versions of everybody. And it's just, it's daunting. It's just a lot.
Yeah. I don't know. I think this should be interesting. I'm intrigued to see how Storm does get her powers back. I'm also intrigued to see her relationship with Forge because I feel like that was another thing that happened a little off screen for us. And then you kind of come into it and you're like, oh, there's a vibe. Like this vibe I felt. And you definitely got it. And then obviously he tries to kiss her and he's like, I love you. And she slaps the crap out of him. And I'm like, you go, girl. And then she gets kidnapped. And I guess he might too, into another dimension. So as usual, great love story happening in another X-Men episode. But I'm excited to see the second half of this, but I'm sad it's not next. But I'm also excited it's not next because I think Jean's storyline is next, which I'm waiting for the second half of.
Yeah, this goes back to give me one full storyline at a time.
For sure.
That'd be great. And quickly going back to Storm's love life, I am particularly invested in her love life of all people because we know who she very famously is married to in the comics. By the way, that's T'Challa, Black Panther.
Well, and divorced. Married and divorced.
Yes. She has done neither of those things in the animated series thus far.
Correct.
And given that we're in the medium of animation and we don't have the unfortunate challenges that were posed by Chadwick's passing because we don't have to worry about recasting other than the voice, that is a storyline that I personally will riot if they do not bring up in at least one of these three seasons that have been confirmed. That's all I want. So that's why I'm super, super invested because I'm like, cool, Forge, that's awesome. I don't know in what order they get together, whether he's post-divorce or pre-T'Challa, unclear, But if they're going to do this pre-T'Challa, I'm here for that. I hope it's not something else because I really want to see that particular coupling on screen. It's something we didn't get in any of the 2000s live action and up until they stopped making them a couple years ago. So let's just please do that. Thank you very much.
Funny that you say that. I actually saw, it was definitely on Twitter and I can't remember the source, so it could just as well be a rumor, but I'm just going to put it out there. There's a lot of talk about there being Avengers crossing into this show. And that shouldn't be shocking to anybody. We've seen a few. First off, I understand that Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver are like a weird gray area. We're going to patch them over. We're going to pretend they're not there for a hot second. They're also Magneto's children in this show. So we don't even need to talk about it yet. Which also makes the Rogue thing weird because I'm sure Wanda is like around her age. So little strange.
I know. I was literally, you were talking about that and I was like, dang, how old must Magneto be to have these full grown children who are around the same age as his little friend?
Well, if you really want to math it, he was a kid during World War II and it's the 90s. So he's like 60 probably. If he's old enough to like remember things that were happening during World War II.
Yeah.
Closer to probably 70.
He ages exceptionally well. That's all I'm going to say.
He does. And this was all animation's fault. Like Disney Animation, what were you doing? But also, you knew what you were doing.
I know. I was not feeling this way about the live action Magneto in his older form. In his younger form, yes, Michael Fassbender, hello. But like, in his older form, I was like, old man, cool, that's great. But animation was like, old man, what's an old man? And I was like, I don't know, Silver Fox, cool, great, thanks.
Yeah, they knew what they were doing. But anyway, putting Quicksilver and our fave Scarlet Witch over on their own team, we've only technically, and correct me if I'm wrong, seen one other Avenger, and that was Captain America having a good old time with Wolverine back during the war. Speaking of the war, they were also there. So we've seen it done. They have appeared before. I think it would be strange to pretend they don't exist. Although, the only thing I'm going to say is, if we just parallel it to the MCU for 5 seconds, we don't really have a lot of heroes in the 90s yet. Keep that in mind. Our Avengers don't start popping up until later. So if we are paralleling it to that, we could theoretically say the reason we aren't seeing Avengers just yet was because the only one we saw was Cap during Cap's prime time before he's out of the ice.
Well, and Carol Danvers.
Oh, who correct. Is the other Avenger? That's why I said, correct me if I'm wrong, because I did not remember that. But yes, which is weird because she's a weird thing because of Rogue and everything that happened with her.
Yeah. Well, and not to mention, like, let's not forget, we don't think that this is 616. Like, I don't think that we're exploring 616 in the 90s.
No.
So you could almost say, like, okay, maybe timing happens differently in this universe, and maybe there is an Avengers, or maybe the Avengers formed because of the X-Men, right? Like, if they do sacrifice themselves, let's say, okay, I'm going to pull together a few theories here.
We saw Spider-Man. We saw his arm. We actually saw a couple. We saw Thor. We saw them for like 5 seconds during the Phoenix storyline. There was like a flash of a couple of the Avengers.
I do remember Spider-Man, but I don't remember the rest. But I'm going to go on a roll here with a theory. So let's say, for example, we do follow this adversary life-death storyline to the comic. I'm going to call it the end. Obviously, the comic storyline doesn't end, but where I stopped reading, essentially, when it came to life-death, which is, all right, cool, the X-Men have sacrificed themselves and they've kept their resurrection a secret. So let's say this is the 90s, they're dealing with all of these, you know, mutant relations issues, X-Men are gone. They're probably the most high-profile mutants. Obviously, Charles Xavier is considered a martyr at this time, and this is his team, these are his people. They're dead. Oh my gosh, right? Not only are they dead, but they have left a void in terms of, you know, controlling bad people and people who are doing the wrong thing. Well, what could step up in order to fill the void, maybe inspired by the now, and I'm using air quotes here that you can't see, dead X-Men, but the Avengers. And, you know, obviously the X-Men aren't going to die because we've got 2 more seasons, but that could be something that's interesting too if the X-Men kind of exist more on the DL and are more of kind of like a secret, almost the way that S.H.I.E.L.D. existed in the show, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., like after S.H.I.E.L.D. had to go underground. Maybe that's how the X-Men operate for the next couple of seasons, while the Avengers kind of step into more of that limelight role, because though they're not mutants, they are, most of them, enhanced individuals, depending on the roster.
I like that theory, because I think it makes sense. And also, we have a storyline that could paint that, so I think it would work. I also do think in a universe like this, if you're going to bring in the Avengers, they have to have been, for some reason, created. And what's a bigger reason than the fact that mutants are all over the place and there's this huge mutant debate? I think for so long, it's always been seeing these two groups as separate. And we're supposed to see, like, one universe has the Avengers, one universe has the X-Men. And we really don't see much of the crossover. Even in the OG show, we really didn't see a lot. I think that episode, the one with Carol and the one with Cap, are the only two that we really see Avengers involved. So I think it would be cool to kind of see the crossover. And I bring all of this up because you said about Black Panther, and it's like, well, what's stopping us? It's right there.
It really is. And I mean, I know this is something that people have been talking about for the live action, so I don't know that they're necessarily going to want to premiere it first in animation, just because it is such a big event. But there is an Avengers versus X-Men storyline where they do fight each other. So could that be something that we see down the road in live action? I don't know. But could it also be something that we do see brought to life in this show? Very much so, because they don't have any of the limitations of the lore that we've built to date, other than what they were putting out in the 90s. And they didn't limit themselves at all in terms of who they were using, what they had on the board, who was dead, who wasn't. They had all of that available to them, and they still do. So they could go ahead and adapt that storyline too if they really wanted to.
That's very true. And I don't know. I don't forget that we're looking at this as a playbook. So maybe they don't really care, because keep in mind, in the 90s, they did the Phoenix storyline. They did the whole Dark Phoenix thing. We saw that play out on the big screen.
How many times did we see Apocalypse?
Right. Well, exactly. We've seen a lot of this play out before. And if this is going to be like a playbook, we don't care. I'd rather go into an X-Men movie not having to do hours upon research to understand fully what's going to be happening, and be able to watch a 20 to 30 minute episode to maybe five about it and be like, cool, that was an amazing summary. I vaguely will know what's going on just enough to be like, yeah, I'm going to understand this and it's going to be great and I'm going to enjoy myself.
Yeah, totally. I mean, to your point, I would love a good blueprint and a little cheat sheet for some of these storylines, because I'm definitely way more familiar with a lot of the Avengers ones, or the famous Avengers ones,
yeah,
than I am, you know, other than maybe the top three that we've already seen of the X-Men ones. You know, I definitely didn't even know this whole life-death thing was a thing until I was like looking at articles and then realizing, oh, this is apparently a really important storyline for them. Cool. Would have never known. You know, so at least with the Avengers, I can pick out, okay, cool, this is the Infinity Gauntlet, like, okay, I get that. Or Civil War, obviously, a lot of these things we've already seen. But when it comes to the X-Men, I am flying blind. So cheat sheets all day.
That's how I feel, man. I am also flying very blind beyond just what I've watched in the show and done a little bit of extra research on the side about. So I will take any little crumbs they are willing to give me. And honestly, with the way this show is, I would love to see them do the Avengers versus X-Men big fight, because you know how long it's going to take us to probably do that in live action? I am willing to let this hold me over. Give it to me, build us up into it, give us the whole thing, devote it all, and then I'll watch it in live action in 10 years. Great.
Yeah, it could totally be fun, and I would definitely love to see it. But I think that is everything in this strange little two-part episode that sets up another episode later in the season. So we're going to call it for X-Men 97 episode 4. It's been fun. Lots of great stuff still to come. So please make sure that you're subscribing on your podcast platform of choice so that you get to follow us as we continue our X-Men coverage throughout the rest of the season. Also, do make sure that you're checking out the website, because it is the hub for all things Sisters Assembled.
You can give us a follow on Twitter at SisAssembledPod and Instagram and Threads at SistersAssembled. You can also be finding our full episodes along with Sisters Scoop news episodes on our YouTube, also at Sisters Assembled. So go ahead and give us a subscribe on there as well. And we will be going right into X-Men 97 episode 5 next week. Super excited. As we've predicted, we think we're visiting the Jean Grey storyline once again. kind of getting some of the fallout from episode 3's Goblin Queen and, you know, the whole Clone Wars thing. So we are super excited. We are loving the show. We hope you guys are too. And as always, keep up with Marvel, as Marvel just blew your mind. So let's talk about it.